Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for March 25th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me, still vacationing after the WBC, the WBC Final Four, is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Well, good morning here from San Francisco. Yeah, things are good. You know, it came to San Francisco to see the final round of the WBC, and I'm kind of getting reacquainted with my mom's hometown, San Francisco, and it's pretty nice.
I imagine it is in the springtime. Wish I were there. Don't forget my candy corn. Thank you very much.
I haven't forgotten your candy corn yet.
Sounds like you haven't gotten them yet, but you haven't forgotten them yet. Okay, good, good.
I haven't forgotten them yet. And I was going through a list of congratulatory emails from my colleagues reminding me of their specific omiyage needs.
Specific omiyage
needs. I won't tell you whose didn't include chocolate.
Okay. All right. And I won't ask. It's a don't ask, don't tell situation. All right.
Exactly.
On this week's show, we've got an interview with former big leaguer and Netherlands WBC squad pitching coach Bert Blyleven. And then we're going to discuss the WBC. We're going to talk about the PL and CL predictions and answer a listener question. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, now remember, for more information on One World Sports, go to oneworldsports.com and learn how to watch live Giants home games. All right, so I caught up with Bert Blyleven during the Tokyo round of the WBC. And you guys can look this up. I'm not going to waste your time too much. A lot of people know who Bert Blyleven is. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2011. He is the pitching coach, or was the pitching coach, for the Dutch team during the WBC. And he is a commentator for the Minnesota Twins on Fox Sports. And, you know, it was funny because I talked to Coco Ballantyne during the Tokyo round of the WBC, and he really wasn't impressed that much with the team's pitching.
Yeah, I got that same impression. He says, basically, what we do is hit and play defense.
Right. I mean, you know, it's more like keep that glove up because you never know what shots are going to be fired at you.
I think that's part of, you know, when you spend all season playing for the Swallows, you expect you get used to a little more. But no, their pitching was very credible.
Yeah, it's certainly except for one game, it helped them stay in games. But
yeah.
Coco also said he hadn't played with the Dutch team with the national team since 2006. So take for what it's worth. I don't know that he knew that much about the pitching staff. But Blyleven, he pitched in the bigs for the Twins, the Pirates, the Indians, Angels, and the Rangers from 1970 to 1992. And he did a great job, I think, with the Hurlers on this team in this tournament. Now, I sliced two quick chats together. And the first part is before his pitchers got the gray matter beaten out of their brains by Japan in a 6-homer game. And the second part is the day after the team had beaten Cuba for the second time and clinched a spot in the Final Four or semifinals.
I was wondering about that. There was a slight disconnect in the text.
Yes.
When I was listening to that. Okay, now I understand. He sounded prescient at first, or uncertain, and then at the end we are certain. So I was wondering about that. Okay.
Yep. And it seemed like some of the players hadn't really slept that much after that clinching game that got them into the semifinal round. What do you want to call it? The Final Four, the semifinal round, the championship
round? The final round.
It had so many names, you know. The second round was the Tokyo round, and it was also a double elimination round. I mean, there were so many names for these things going out there. I like the tournament. I like how it's run. I think because I've listened to some other shows and I've listened to other announcers, and even Rick Sutcliffe on the television broadcast was saying if they want it to be taken seriously, they should do this, that, and the other. But all those comments were fashioned or came out of the fact that they want the U.S. team to be in the final.
Sure.
And that was it, you know, and I thought it was a great tournament, and lucky me, I picked the team that actually won it.
Oh, good for you.
And I'll tell you, the only reason I picked the Dominican Republic and didn't pick Japan was it's really hard to three-peat. That was basically my premise, that, you know, I didn't think it was going to be Japan. So who's the next team that's strongest, that has a good chance? And I looked through the rosters, and it was the Dominican Republic in my eyes. But you still got to do it on the field. I thought they were going to score more runs looking at their lineup.
I did, too.
They didn't.
I did, too. Well, my thing with Japan was that, first of all, it is hard to three-peat, but that's a after-the-fact thing. You know, when you've won two, essentially your chances are as good as anybody else's. It doesn't, they don't change. It's just hard over the series. You know, it's hard to have three winners in a row, not because the third one's any more difficult, but because it's always difficult.
Yeah.
So I disagree. I disagree with your logic, but the fact is it's always hard to win. And I thought Japan was very lucky to win the first one.
Very, very
lucky. And they needed a lot of luck to get as far as they did in this one, to be honest. And they didn't have any luck in the final round like they did in 2006.
Right.
So,
well, the Dutch team had a lot of luck, and in part that was due to, I think, the teachings of Bert Blyleven. So let's go ahead and listen to what he had to say.
Just had to win. And once we won, then we mathematically they found out even who the winner of Taipei or South Korea, we're still going to be going in. Whether we were going to go in as the first seed or the second seed, we didn't know. But you know, it's something that we did in 2009, get to round two. Now we want to advance. And end up pitching, you know, throw strikes, attack.
Is that your plan for this round here? I mean,
oh, same thing. Yeah, it doesn't change. It's just baseball, you know, and it's a game of baseball. And you go out there and you just do the best you can, and you stay aggressive in the strike zone.
I know you guys had to worry about a lot of scenarios.
Well, it was a seesaw game. You know, we scored two, they scored two. They came right back, we scored two more, they scored two to tie it. And I think, you know, in the eighth inning when they scored a couple, even though we were down 6-4, I think it showed the attitude of the Dutch players. They fought back, they tied it, and then won in the bottom of the ninth. So, you know, our pitching staff has been pretty consistent, and that's all you can ask. You know, Cuba's a very good hitting ball club.
Yeah.
And, you know, we held those crooked numbers a little bit on the low side compared to what we did to, say, Japan, you know, a couple nights prior to where they had that big four-run inning a couple times that really hurt.
Now, a lot of the experts before this tournament started were looking at the United States and saying most of that, the entire roster is made up of major league players, so it must be the best team and all that stuff. What's your opinion of that?
Well, you say experts. I don't know who they are, you know, first of all. A lot of those experts have never been down here between the lines actually performing. Our guys compete, and that's the main thing. That's what I think myself and Steve Jensen, the other pitching coach with me here, have tried to tell them. You know, hey, they're no different. They're going to swing at pitches that are up in the zone, and they're probably going to hit it hard. But if you make your pitches, hopefully good things will happen. We have a very good defensive ball club, something that's probably, you know, overlooked. Our offense has a lot of potential in it. We do have some injuries that might hurt us, but, you know, it comes down to good pitching and good defense. And as long as we can keep the ball in the ballpark, if we give up a home run, make it a solo home run. That's going to happen, but trust your defense. Against Cuba in that first game here, we turned, I think, five double plays.
All
four infield double plays. Huge for Diego Markwell on the mound. So he pitched great because of his good defense, and he got the ground ball when he needed it.
Now, Japan has obviously won this thing twice.
Yeah, I was actually over at the Hall of Fame today, and I saw the trophies. It would really look good at the Dutch Federation.
And I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. But if Japan were to win this thing for a third time, what do you think that means for Japanese?
Well, they're very good players there. You know, Japan has been playing baseball almost as long as the U.S., and they take a lot of pride in, you know, putting a good product out there. I'm happy for Japan. I think it's, you know, baseball through the WBC is an international event, and it just shows the talent that is here in Japan.
And what do you think about some of the lesser teams like Italy, Brazil?
I think it's great. I think it's great that everybody gets to compete. I think the WBC opened the doors to every country to try to, you know, get the final 16. You know, they had something earlier this summer to allow the Italys and things like that. Italian ball club is where we were 2 years ago in round two. Now the Dutch team has gotten a little bit better. There's more and more young, talented Dutch players from either Holland or Curacao that are on the major league roster, if not like Simmons, who might start for the Atlanta Braves. So, you know, Bam Bam's done a great job of handling the staff, Hensley. And you know, we'll just see. Hensley Mullins is our manager, and we call him Bam Bam because he can hit the heck out of the ball when he played. But you know, it's just going out and playing the game and having fun.
Now, would you guys? I mean, I know you guys have these injury issues, and you're going to have some time off. I don't know if that's a positive thing. You got to travel, all these things. What's the game plan going to San Francisco?
Well, first of all, you know, we have to see how we do here, whether we're the first seed or the second seed going into San Francisco, and then when we play. And as far as a pitching coach, I'll try to set our pitching rotation up for that one game, because if we lose one, we're out. And it's single elimination. So we've got to be ready for that one game, whether it be Sunday or Monday in San Francisco.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Well, I know you're probably not going to hear this, Mr. Blylevin, but thank you very much. It was truly an honor to talk to you, and I appreciate your time. Your thoughts on his attack the strike zone kind of mentality with whatever pitchers they brought out there.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing that impressed me, one, about the WBC, and I'll be going back to it in general, is the attitude from a lot of these teams has changed since the tournament began in 2006, when it was, we're just going to try to put the team on the field and, you know, and see what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll try to catch the ball and throw strikes and try to look for our pitches to hit at the plate and just roll the dice. And now what you have is teams, Italy and Brazil and China and the Netherlands, coming out with a specific plan, not only to be on the field and not look bad, but to be on the field and beat people.
Mm-hmm.
This was a revelation this year. The games were very close. There were so many upset. And his point that the game is the same, that you have to just stay aggressive and compete in the strike zone, I thought, that's absolutely true. These guys are playing the same game. And if you play the game as well as you can, you have a chance to beat people, which is what we found out. Now, the Dutch were very good. I thought the pitching was quite good. He took, you know, what they could do, had a game plan. And, I think what he said is accurate. Now, his comments that I liked, talking about, you know, why Japan won, is, I think, something that's overlooked, is that the Japanese are very good players. They don't compete in a certain way that, you know, they're not major leaguers, so they don't play a certain way.
Right.
But the fact is that they are very good players and they can compete. His comments that the Dutch team is a little bit better, I think, was accurate. They've been adding all these young kids from Curacao and the islands in the Caribbean. They haven't added much major league talent from the Netherlands, but they've got all these young kids coming from the islands. And what has happened with the people I talked to was that they're getting more and more used to playing with each other. So, I was talking to Robbie Quartermans, the Dutch ace, and he said basically they 4 years ago or 7 years ago and 10 years ago, they didn't really know these kids from the Caribbean. It used to be a Dutch team from the Netherlands.
Right.
But they've got these tremendous infielders and outfielders coming up from mostly from Curacao, which is Hensley Mullins and Andrew Jones Island.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are playing for the same cause. And they're, you know, most, but not all of the pitchers are from the Netherlands. The guy who had the biggest impact with the Netherlands was Diego Markwell.
Left-handed pitcher, yeah.
He pitched well. He pitched well against the Dominican Republic. Against the Dominican Republic. And he pitched well against Cuba. In fact, he pitched better against the Dominican Republic than he did against Cuba.
Well, they turned five double plays behind him. I wouldn't say he pitched well against Cuba so much as pitchers like to say, is they made pitches when they needed to. But I wouldn't say that, because a couple of those double play balls were rockets that probably just found a glove rather than, you know, not finding a hole.
Well, having not seen that, those were the two WBC games in Japan's pools that I did not watch in person. Mm-hmm. In fact, I did not see the Dutch game at all, so that was the only one I didn't watch. But that's why I said he pitched better. He pitched quite well against the Dominican Republic. So, his attitude was, Blylevin's approach was very good, and I think the Dutch are a very solid team. And they're not really afraid of anybody. This is something that is astounding to people who watch Major League Baseball, that their game is the game.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else should be afraid of them.
Yeah, that was something that really irked me the more I heard on some of the broadcasts, like especially Rick Sutcliffe. And I hate to pick on him because I'm sure other people were saying similar, making similar comments, but I can single him out because I did watch some of the broadcasts and that they were just saying, well, if he gets this guy out, he doesn't have to face major league talent after that. And it's going to be, it's essentially saying it's going to be a cakewalk. And the kids, Andrelton Simmons was just, he was smacking the ball around and he's not yet, quote unquote, major league talent, but he's going to be there soon. And like I said about the Japanese team, before the tournament started, there are guys who probably could be playing in the major leagues now who are not. It's not a matter of the number of major league players you have. It's the kind of talent and then how you manage it and what the situations are in the games. And the players really came through. I like the Dutch team. I liked when they beat the Cuban team. And the thing I attributed it to was the fact that they paid so much attention to the details. And I tweeted it out before the second game between the Dutch and the Cuban team when Hensley Mullins came into the press conference and he said something to the effect that the maybe he was trying to discern what the Cubans' plan was at the plate when they're batting, and he said maybe their plan is that they have no plan. And immediately I thought of you because we had this discussion on the podcast a couple years back I think when talking about having a plan being better than no plan at all. And he really couldn't discern what their plan was. And their plan was, hey, look, the little things will take care of themselves. We're just going to whack the ball. And we're going to look at fastballs and we're going to try to jack them out. They hit their share. They scored enough runs to win that game. The problem was they didn't play enough defense. They didn't pay attention to the finer points. And they ended up walking home. And they were so dejected. I actually felt so sorry for them. But it was so funny that Victor Mesa, after the press conference, went through and shook all the reporters' hands in the front row as he left the press conference after they lost and were booted out of the WBC, as if he were happy that it happened. But I think he...
I
think it was his last chance to get some more camera time, I guess.
He's just an animated, you know, he's a very animated, friendly guy, and he loved being there. He loves being in the spotlight. He's a red carpet kind of guy. But to comment on that, Robbie Quarterman said essentially what Hensley Mullins said, that their hitters don't change their approach. They don't change their game plan during the game.
Right.
What you get from Cuba is this, I think, an attitude, unfortunately, that they're and based for a good reason, that they're very good, talented players. And they basically is if they their attitude is if they play their game, you can't beat them. The only problem is when the game changes, they don't respond. That seems to be the attitude.
Well, they respond by Victor Mesa changing pitchers.
I have a friend, Rinaldo. I'll give a shout out to my buddy Rinaldo in Cuba, and also to Peter Bjarkman, Dr. Baseball, who's a very knowledgeable person about Cuban baseball. I heard some of the wildest Victor Mesa stories. Next podcast, I'll give you some information where you can find stuff about Peter Bjarkman's website and great information about Cuban baseball. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, so they don't change. But as far as the that's according to the Dutch. As far as the WBC went and talking about the WBC and some of the criticism of the WBC in the States comes down. I think there's two. The one you touched on, that it's about the major leagues, and it can't succeed unless it's really about us. Now, I talked to Paul Archie, who's the head. As far as I understand, he's an important person in WBC Incorporated,
right?
Which
yeah,
is
I
the
met
founding
Paul.
Body. Yes. Okay, and he said basically, we'd love to have the U.S. in the final. But the tournament isn't about the United States. And this is a very hard thing for American fans to understand because everything is about us.
If I can interject, I didn't get the impression that it was that big a deal to the fans. It seemed like the people who were covering it, the reporters, the announcers, the broadcasters, those were the people who had the biggest problems with it. And then the teams in Major League Baseball not wanting to allow their players to play in it. And I'm kind of regretting the fact that Hanley Ramirez of the Dodgers was playing now, because he had a very innocuous play, and he's out for 2 months because he tore, what, a tendon in his thumb. So, I mean, but I understand it. But that's that can happen in preseason. That can happen, you know, swinging a bat. So, I mean, you know, if you're going to be active, you risk injury, and you can be active in spring training. It's just, it's the Animal House mentality. You can't do that to our pledges. Only we can do that to our pledges. And, you know, that's not right.
Well, some moron tweeted, because it was raining. What morons always tweet when it rains is that someone's going to get hurt.
Moron.
or somebody we knew and loved. Someone's going to get hurt. Anyway, some moron tweeted that if someone got hurt because of playing in the rain, it would have been a catastrophic blow to the WBC. So what I'm thinking of, let's see, if somebody gets hurt on the first day of spring training, maybe we should cancel the season because it's too dangerous. And I'm thinking Curtis Granderson got hurt, basically lost his season, ended on the first day of spring training. So we're going to give up on spring training because somebody got hurt?
Yeah.
People get hurt, it's baseball. Okay, it's baseball. So now the last two things I have to say about the WBC are this.
Okay.
Listening to the comments, first of all, my analogy about the WBC is, one, essentially people saying what you said. It's not finished. It's Bud Selig wants this. It's not that. It's not a finished product. We want the finished product. We don't want to see the gestation period. Well, tough luck. This is a journey. People say it has a long way to go. And you can see that as a negative, or you can see that as a positive and think, this is going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a lot of challenges ahead, but there are a lot of possibilities. And MLB people are used to fixed dimensions. You know, I mean, like mental dimensions, spring training, the season, the World Series. They're like their uncertainty within these parameters. But when you introduce a new dimension, people get upset because they cannot. It doesn't fit into the old dimension. They don't see it.
Right.
And this is the announcers, and then I think to a large part of the fans. I mean, a lot of fans in San Francisco had no idea the WBC was actually here.
Well, that was my point, is that, you know, they're indifferent. It's not them so much. Right. It's the people who actually have either are supposed to be there, are there, or are not enjoying it because the team they want to see isn't there.
Yeah. So because normally in American baseball, it's about your team. Baseball is about your team. It's not some abstract thing about the national team, because that's not really what MLB is selling, 10 months a year.
Right.
Now, Paul Archie said it's made to grow the game, growing the game outside the U.S. and displaying that growth in a major league ballpark requires imagination to go beyond the normal dimensions. Now, the other thing I would like to comment on is that people who don't like it are comparing apples to oranges. They're comparing the World Cup of Soccer to the WBC. Mm-hmm. They're comparing the World Series to the WBC. They're comparing the Major League season to the WBC. And that's, you know, that's like comparing a 19-year-old kid in his first Major League at-bat to Alex Rodriguez when he's 30 years old and cranking out 34 home runs a year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy doesn't look like, you know, they keep talking about him, but he doesn't look like Alex Rodriguez. You know, he didn't have a very good plan of that in that at bat. Well, of course he didn't have a plan. He's a 19-year-old kid. He's learning to have a plan. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the World Series, just to remind people, now the World Series began in 1903, but it was such a big thing that it wasn't played in 1904 because New York Giants manager John McGraw refused. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is where the World Series. We had a team that didn't want to play in the World Series. Okay? England, which is the home of soccer, the birthplace of association football, or whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
chose not to participate in the first three World Cups in 1930, 1934, and 1938. They didn't play in a World Cup until 1950, when the U.S. kicked their butts.
Mm.
So think about that. So think about the World Cup, and think about the most popular soccer country in the world, the most traditional soccer company in the world, thinking about wanting to play. Okay, now, you know, fast forward 70, 80 years later, and things change. So that's what I have to say about people who would trash the WBC because it's a 19-year-old kid learning to have a plan.
Right. Yeah, it's still growing. It's going to have some more growing pains. They still have some things to do in terms of adjusting it, but I think the tournament's fine. I had a great time. I watched as much baseball as I could. I got up in the mornings and taped some of the games and I watched, and then I went out to the ballpark and watched it live. And at the Tokyo round, I got to see the Dutch team in person. And of course it moved on, beating Cuba twice, and the Japanese team won that 16-4 game where all the home runs. And immediately I said, because there was a cycle of home runs hit. There was a solo home run. There was a two-run homer, a three-run homer, and a grand slam. Sure. And, you know, I think I talked about the fact that that had happened one year with Hiroshima. I think it was last year. And but I'd never, you know, seen it. And so there that happened. And, you know, they advanced, and it was great. And then the championship round happened. So let's talk about that. Puerto Rico knocked out Japan 3-1. Kenta Maeda was not sharp in the first inning. No. And he allowed
he was not sharp the whole time. But he battled for having a pitcher whose pitches were not going where he wanted them to go.
Yeah, considering how bad. And that's the first thing. The on-site reporter who was there for the Japanese channel was the old Lotte pitcher who went to the New York Mets, Satoru Komiyama, who pitched with the Mets. But he said, considering how much he was battling himself, that, you know, for him to keep the team to a run was Puerto Rico to one run was pretty good. But I thought at the time, well, one run isn't going to win this game. I had complained about the roster that Koji Yamamoto, the Japan skipper, put together in the first place, but I don't really think that the roster was an issue, and I don't think any of the strategy was an issue. I think they just all swung at junk that was out of the zone, and they didn't make contact, and it was really uncharacteristic to see guys like Uchikawa, Matsuda, Inaba, some really disciplined hitters. Abe did the same thing. Swing at pitches they had no chance of making contact with, and even if they did, they weren't going to do any damage with the pitches. And
and
I kept saying, why are you guys not patient? It's, you know, it's one lousy run, you're behind. You don't have to try to hit every bad pitch. And they just had a bad game, and that happens.
They had a bad game, and this game was exactly what happened to them against Taiwan. It was exactly what happened with them against Taiwan. They got into their heads that they weren't going to see a good pitch to hit, and they were looking for a pitch that was almost qualified. They were looking for the best pitch that qualified as a pitch they might swing at in their most desperate hour.
Right.
And they swung at those.
Yeah. All right, well, in the interest of time here and to move on, we have to talk about the Uchibata base running blunder. Now, I think
you could call that the Uchibata Yama, I think.
Well, you know what? There were two things I had to say about this. I think it was a clear case of Uchikawa missing a sign. He put his head down. He never looked at the catcher. He was running. And, you know, Ibata made that first move like he was going to third, but he stopped. I think he knew what the sign was. Koji Yamamoto, to his credit, didn't blink in the dugout. And he accepted the blame, but I think he knows, obviously he knows, that a sign was missed. I think if you look at Uchikawa's reaction, which we've seen on the news over here, I don't think you've seen it over there in San Francisco, him sitting on the bench and just putting his head back. He knows he missed the sign. Nobody ever interviewed Ibata. I never saw any interviews with Ibata about the play. They were all Uchikawa about the play.
Right. Okay.
But had Yamamoto actually put on a double steal, I think it was really good. It would have been really good strategy, and it would have been one of the greatest moves ever. I don't know that it's good to do it against any of the Molina brothers, but had things gone right, it could have been a great play.
It could have been. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. There's about four factors in there. One is the day before the game, Hideki Hashigami, Giants coach, who was added very late to be a tactical advisor to Yamamoto and to formulate a plan, said, first of all, we're not going to run against Molina. Okay, that's rule number one. We just don't. It's just suicide.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Now, Yamamoto said the pitcher at the time, he had a very big and unwieldy motion, so they figured they could run on him. Now, as from what I understand, the sign was, if you get a lead, take off. And now the person who's in charge there is Ibata, because he's the lead runner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so obviously he thought he had a lead, and then he changed his mind, and he went back. Okay, so first of all, the situation, he's got Abe at the plate. Now, Abe has done absolutely nothing. And apparently their thinking is, we're going to essentially try to take the responsibility off of Abe's shoulder and put it on Hayato Sakamoto, who's batting behind him. Mm-hmm. So Abe was kind of shocked to see it. You look at the complete disbelief when he's watching the play unfold. So Ibata takes five steps and retreats to second base. Now, okay, that's his play, and that's the right play in that circumstance. And some people would say the play shouldn't have been called. I think it was a big gamble. It was a big gamble, like sending Toritani to second with two outs against Taiwan.
Right.
But which did work out. This one didn't. Okay, I'm good with that. Taking the bat out of Abe's hands is a kind of an I don't know. He was basically saying, I didn't really want him in the number four spot, but I had to bat him there anyway.
Yeah.
Then the final thing is, what is up with Uchikawa is, yes, Uchikawa was the person who could have salvaged that play. He could have salvaged that disaster. And his mistake was, he took off and he saw it and he ran for all he was worth.
Mm-hmm.
And he put himself out of a position to salvage that play. If he had five or six steps, if he had kept an eye on second base, we would have been okay in that. Of course, you know, Abe hits him to a double play, same difference. But anyway, it was a very unfortunate, bizarre end to a bizarre game. But you know, more power to the Puerto Ricans. They played a more solid game, and they deserve to win.
Yeah, I mean, two things. One thing on what you said, the wording, I mean, I listened to the Japanese. Yeah, the wording, even in Japanese, was just vague. It was, you know, if you have a lead or something like that. And I think in these situations, especially tournament games, that has to be very clear. And I think the confusion manifested itself in that play, is that one guy interpreted it, the situation differently from the other guy, and that's unfortunate. I don't know. I mean, it could have been that was what happened in Ibata's stop, but I think it was, like I said, a clear case of Ibata missing a sign. Now, the other thing was, Yamamoto in the press conference accepted the blame, and yep, I think you could see that he was clearly sticking up for his player. And hey,
well, that's what you're supposed to do.
I thought it was very respectful. You know, it was unfortunate, and everybody points to this play as the game changer and all that stuff. And I don't think so. I think they had lost the game with the mental approach that they had earlier on, when they had a couple scoring chances and they swung at pitches that they had no chance of hitting. But if we don't move on to the next subject, we're going to be speaking until the opening night here in Japan.
All right.
Congratulations again to the Dominican Republic and to Puerto Rico. It was a great tournament. Thank you very much. I can't wait for the next WBC.
Yep.
Let's talk about our predictions for the Central League and the Pacific League. We will start with the Central League. It's a year ago that I think I picked the Giants, and that was a no-brainer. Now, I put these down in no particular order at all. Last year we went in alphabetical order, so I just thought we'd start with the Yakult Swallows just because. All right. So I'll start, if you don't mind. I think this team does a great job of winning under their manager, Junji Ogawa. I don't know if they're good or bad sometimes. I know that they're very professional in the way they go about playing the game. Kazuhiro Hatakeyama, he's had a good spring. Vladimir Ballantyne, I think he's going to have some groin issues that linger a little bit, but I think he's going to be fine. Lastings Millage is going to be good again. In fact, I expect him to be better now that he has had this year under his belt. You know, he's got the year under his belt. The pitching is going to be, I think it's going to be average, I'm sorry to say. Shuhei Tateyama, he's worked around injuries. Masanori Ishikawa, he's got the same injuries. Kyohei Nakamura, injuries. They have the three top guys have often been injured. They drafted a couple of young arms, and I think they'll have to bring those guys along. But my impression from the start is that they're not going to do that well, and I've got them finishing fourth.
Okay. My thinking of basically the Swallows game is solid pitching and defense. I don't see the offense improving that much. Now, the reason I say that, okay, there's the – I agree with what you're saying, The pitching, the two plus sides are, the two positive question marks is Yoshinori Tateyama going to Yoshinori Sato going to contribute, because he was zero last year with injury. Is Akagawa going to look like, was his year at the end of 2011 representative of what he's capable of?
Right.
And the same same question goes for Lasting's millage. Now, he had a tremendous year last year, and Valentin had a very successful year, despite, you know, little flaws and ticks in his season. The Swallows went out and did a very unusual thing for Japan. They locked Valentin and Millage up for these big, hefty contracts, you know, basically to keep them from being successful at Yakult and then making a lot of money with the Omiuri Giants.
Right, yeah, long-term contracts, yeah.
Tony Barnett, yeah. So they're giving them security. Now, it's not about, oh, people play less well with security, because I don't buy that. People are individuals. They have the power to choose. But I would say that this is, we don't really know what is Lasting's millage, nor did Japan.
Right.
We don't really know from looking at the numbers. He had a lot of good swings. He had a lot of good approaches. His defense was what it was. Anyway, so that's the point about people having big seasons is, you know, you can't bet the bank on them. He could take a step forward, but it seems like it was such an extremely good season that it will be, even if he plays as well or better, his numbers could decline. So I like the Swallows, but I don't dislike them as much. I don't dislike their prospects as much as you do. I have them second.
Okay.
Excuse me, I have them third.
Third. Okay. All right, next team, Bay Stars. I like the additions, of course, because most of them are Dragons. I think they've upgraded immensely in many areas, but in the overall scope, they need to get 40 games better. Okay, they were 40 games out of first place, let's say.
They need 40 games better to win.
To win, but they need to get 30 games better to get, because 10.5 the Dragons finished 10.5 games out, so 31 games if you want to get really technical, Michael Westbay. And did they do that? I think time will tell. I would say probably not.
Time will tell.
I would say probably not, but, you know, guys like Blanco, Sosa, Morgan, Tamura, Soto, those guys really are going to add a lot to this team. Their rotation, Miura, Soto, Takasaki is all set up on the front end, but on the back end, Kuniyoshi, he's still just 21, by the way. The guy I said was going to have the breakout season last year, he really didn't break out. He kind of broke down. Kagami. We don't know who's going to be the other guy. Might be Fuji, who pitched well the other day. But I think they're either going to be really good and make the playoffs, or they're going to be pretty bad and finish fifth. But I'm going to go out on a limb, because you know that I hate everybody sticking with the status quo. I'm going to pick them to finish in third.
Okay. My thing about the Bay Stars, essentially yours, this team could improve a lot. The team has to come together and play with heart, number one. They don't have a lot of, you know, their big offensive heart, Tony P, Tony B, Ramichan, is not a consistent offense by itself. But it's going to be a question of how the rest of the guys fit into that. They have no offense at the catcher. They don't have much at first base. They don't have much at second base. They don't have much at shortstop. They got outfielder, blah, blah, blah. Pitching is, as you said, their manager is not the brightest light in the chandelier. And I pick the Bay Stars, however, to finish second.
Yeah, I see the potential. I think everybody's going to jump on that boat. I saw someone else who had picked them to finish second, too. So the Hanshin Tigers. The question for the Tigers is, the things they added, or has it been, will it be enough to overcome what they still have? And what I mean by that is Brooks Conrad, I like this guy. I like his fight. Kosuke Fukudome, I think he can take over in left, but I don't think he's going to be as effective as Tomoaki Kanemoto was there. Tsuyoshi Nishioka, I know how much you love him. Ha ha. He's a good athlete, but I mean, will he?
I love his athleticism.
Yeah, is he going to bring it on the field every day? Is he going to have the attitude? And they still, the Arai boys, you know, I want to root for them, and I think they're going to hit enough to stay in the lineup. But I'm not sure if Takahiro, the older brother, is going to hit enough to actually make a difference. Younger brother has had a good spring again. He looks good. He looks like the hitter that you talked about him being last year. Hayato Ito looks like he's going to be a he's going to at least get a shot. Matt Merton, I think the expectations for him are to do a little bit better, but they still have trouble at catcher. They have some issues on the back end of the rotation. I think I'm stuck with more questions than I have answers, and if my case, I'm going to have him finishing fifth.
Okay. You see, we're hitting the same notes here. Now, one of the things about the Tigers I think that's going to be fun more than impactful is Fujinami, their 19-year-old pitcher out of high school.
Right.
My question with this bunch is, who's the leader? And the answer is, well, okay, Toritani's the leader, but he's kind of a quiet leader, and I love him as a player. He's very solid. But this team needs some – this team's really going to miss Kanemoto. Arai is no leader. I mean, Takahiro Arai.
Right.
Yep. Yota Arai, as far as him, I've been saying he's a good hitter for the last 4 years, so we can qualify that a little bit. They need a leader because Nishioka's on the team. Nishioka is a guy who needs somebody to stand around and basically tell him to get his stuff together. If he does that, then this team could be, you know, Nishioka would stand up and this could be a pretty good team. The catching is a problem. They got in a guy who wasn't good enough to be the third best catcher at Oryx, and he's going to be their starter. Yeah, too many problems as far as everybody having bad years that year, last year. We'll have to see how this management team deals with so many issues. It looks like they're trying to solve a Rubik's Cube while they're riding a unicycle. There's just too many issues and too many questions going on. I think I picked the Tigers fourth.
All right. Carp, go ahead.
Okay. I don't have much to say about the Carp. Now, as John was saying, that unlike the United States, where the WBC is an afterthought to spring training, in Japan, it's the big show. And so John and I basically were watching the WBC for a month. And some of the finer details of the season have eluded me. And they have no Higashide, which is not that big an issue for the Carp because he's been up and down with his health for the few years. But they do have a full season of Dobayashi, and I think he's going to really blossom or settle down or something. He could be much bigger. They have a bunch of players who I like, but they don't have the outstanding big guys. Kenta Maeda could be, he could have another Sawamura year. I think he's got some issues. He's got some scores to settle left over from the WBC. I don't think mentally, but I think he's going to be more prime than ever if he doesn't burn out in the second half because of the early start. I think the Carp are going to finish fifth, unfortunately. I'm not convinced that Kenjiro Nomura is the person to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
All right. It could be that the Bay Stars avoid the basement just because of Hiroshima's tumble. I think, you know me, I like their pitching staff. Maeda, Nomura, Ohtake, Bullington, Fukui, they can match up with just about anybody in Japan. That's a really good rotation. But then the loss of Higashide, I think is, you say it's not going to hurt that much. I think they made a lot of errors and they played a little bit of shoddy defense when he was in there and he's a veteran. Now they're going to go with a young guy, probably Kikuchi, maybe Abe, maybe Kita. I don't even know. And I think that's really a shaky situation in the middle of the infield. You really need to be strong up the middle, especially with Prince Error Boy Dobayashi at third. I don't like a lot of the things I'm seeing on defense. I don't know how much Eldred, who has had a really good spring, and I don't know how much Fred Lewis are going to make a difference. I still think they're going to have issues scoring. So no matter how well they pitch, they could lose a lot of 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, 3-1 games. I see them finishing in last.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. The Giants.
Well, let's see. What's to say about the Giants? A lot of good players, I think. Some players with things to prove. Obviously, some players with things to prove from the WBC, and I would say particularly Shinosuke Abe, who was over his head last year. Not that he isn't a good player, but good players have extreme seasons. He was a good player who had an extreme season. You know, you don't expect that to happen 2 years in a row. But having said that, he had an extremely good season, as I'm never tired of saying, in 2011.
Right.
He's also at an age where it's going to be hard to improve on any extreme season. So I don't expect him. Yeah. He's 34. He turned 34 the day after the final. So there we are. Manny Acosta, I think, is going to be a help for them. Now, the Giants have done what they've never done before, which is get a new foreigner to play second base this year. Wait, they do this every year. They've been doing this for the last 7 years, and they've never found one they actually liked. So we'll see. I don't think that's going to hurt them. They're still improving talent in the terms of Hisayoshi Chono making adjustments, Sakamoto making adjustments. I don't see a lot of other young talent on this team other than the pitching, which could be just overpowering. If Sugiuchi's healthy, which I believe he is, and Utsumi is healthy, which I believe he is, and Sawamura continues to, you know, just to sort of fine-tune his game, those guys are deadly. The offense is going to be a little hit and miss. The pitching is going to be a little hit and miss, but that's hitting and missing at a very high level. I picked the Giants first.
Oh, yeah, they didn't add much to me in the offseason, and they didn't need much.
They did add the big Sugano.
Well, let me finish.
Okay. Oh, excuse me.
They made some subtractions by getting rid of people like Tono, and that probably helped them out. Most of the team was away for the WBC, and they still had the best winning percentage as of Saturday in the preseason. Yosuke Miyaguni, right-hander, he's going to be his third year. He's going to be the opening day starter by default because the top half of the rotation has been gone off, you know, frolicking with the WBC, playing around in the bullpen and not being stretched out. So they have to get ready for the season. I think they're having a slow start because of that, but they had a slow start last year, and look what they did. Yep. So, they did get nephew Hatsunori Hara, the skipper, his nephew Tomoyuki Sugano, who looks like he pitched today at Tokyo Dome, I think, again, and he looked pretty good. He got touched up for some runs in his first outing at Tokyo Dome, but said he needed to make adjustments, and then he knew what the problem was, and since then he's been shutting people down. Of course, one of those teams was the Carp, so I don't know. You can take that for what it's worth. I think Abe is a great player, had a great season. I don't expect him to match that production this year, but I also expect other guys to step up their production, and I don't see any team out there that can make up that 10-game-plus difference, so I'm picking the Giants to finish first as well.
Yeah, I mean, barring some, you know, just fluke of nature, you know, but we had that, like, as you said, we had at the beginning of the season, the Giants played essentially 130, you know, they won more games than everybody else playing 135 games because their first nine were just shot.
Okay.
So,
all right, Dragons.
Dragons. Now, here's the thing with the Dragons. Basically, they changed every part they could change. And like when they did with – they parted company with Tyrone Woods a few years ago. They're basically bringing in a bunch of new guys. They've broken their – for good reason. They've broken their Dominican Republic lifeline by getting rid of pitching coach Mori.
Mori's on, yeah.
And who was spent, you know, every winter vacationing in the Dominican and picking up ball players.
Right.
I mean that, you know, in a sort of a acquisitional sense.
Right. Which is all I was thinking about. I'm sure that's what everybody else is. You woke everybody up on that one.
Woke me up too. Okay. But anyway, he was there all the time. And for the first time in about 7 or 8 years, the Dragons have two non-Dominican players on their roster. So we're going to see how that works. Now, this will be the second time for Morimichi Takagi to manage a team in transition. He did it when he was first manager, and he failed miserably at it. And I don't expect him to do any better. He sort of was able to keep things idling from what was left over from Hiromitsu Ochiai's regime. But he's 2 years down from that. The talent supply is no longer there. I think they're going to have serious issues. I don't see this team coming together with the aging people. I'm my prediction for the Dragons, they're going to finish last in that about June 1st, Tatsunami is going to be the manager.
Actually, I wouldn't mind that if Tatsunami was.
I wouldn't either. I was so impressed with him.
I was
so impressed with him at the WBC.
Yeah.
I thought he was a natural hitter and a kind of a wonder boy, but this guy knows what he's doing.
Okay.
And I'd love to have him as a manager anywhere in Japanese baseball. It would be a plus.
Okay. I'm wondering if this is the year that age catches up with the Dragons, because I joked last year that they had 200 years worth of playing experience on the infield last year, and it looks like they're going to have to add another year to, you know, all four of the guys, or at least three of them. So I'm sorry, four of them, including Tanishige, the catcher. So They picked up a pair of imports. We have little idea what their impact is going to be. But I do think that they're going to bring along the young kid, Takahashi. And I don't think last place is possible for them because their pitching is going to be okay in the areas that it needs to be okay. And they're going to have a decent bullpen. I have them finishing third. Okay. Now, I did ask Wayne Grosick for his Central League and Pacific League picks, and he has it laid out
That's
like this.
Switch.
He's got Giants 1, Swallows 2, Carp 3, Tigers 4, Bay Stars 5, and he's got the Dragons finishing last.
Well, we did that before, and Ochi smacked us. So.
All right, let's go on to the Pacific League. We'll start with the Eagles. I'll start here again. I think they're going to pitch better than they did last year, and I think they're going to score better than they did last year. I think they have a chance to defend better. I'm not, you know, my feelings about Kazuo Matsui at short with his looping throws and all that stuff, but I don't think he has to play every game, and I think the less he plays, the better. Masahiro Tanaka, I think if he stays healthy, and we, because remember, he wasn't healthy all last season, and that did cost him in the end. I look for him to have a bounce back season in that respect. I think Yoshinao Kamata is going to be stepping it up. They've drafted another young arm who's, I don't even want to talk about it too much because I don't like rookies, and you know that. I don't like young players. I don't like
stay out of John's way.
Just get out of here, punk. but I think this team is a team I always want to root for. I call them the gutty little Eagles. I think Andrew Jones is going to add a presence in the lineup, and they have not really had that. I hope he can. I hope he can stay healthy. If he stays healthy, I think he'll produce enough. I think McGahee is going to add a little bit. I got him finishing third.
Okay. What I have with the Eagles is, again, I agree with what you say. There's a lot of pluses. The Eagles have – one of the pluses I would add that you didn't mention are some of the young infielders they have. Some one of these – they've got two or three guys.
Snot noses, huh? Okay.
Exactly. Who can really hit. You know, if one of these guys puts it together, they're not far away from being really good players. I think another guy is Hijidisawa, who could have a big year. I don't really see it happening, but he could have a big year. He's certainly young enough to improve.
Right.
And that's interesting. I like Shima behind the plate. You know, he's not the greatest catcher in the world, but he's pretty solid in a situation where most teams don't have solid catchers.
Right.
So I like that. I like the pitching staff. Now my question is this: how not is Andrew Jones going to help, but how much he's going to help? Now he's in a unique situation. He's a guy who is at the end of his career, but he's had such a career that he could come in and basically say, you know, he could lay down the law with these guys and say, look, you know, he can come, of course, having been away from spring training is a big problem that he's, you know, he's missed a couple of weeks.
Right, he's going to have to get used to it. Yeah, I got that.
Right. So that is probably the downturn here. But the plus side could be interesting. I don't see him as being a problem, as many major league stars are, particularly if they're American, you know, white American major league stars. But he's a guy who could be an impact leader. I'm picking the Eagles to finish fourth.
Okay. The Lions. Mike and Tokorozawa, our correspondent, whom we haven't heard from in a while, is probably going to hate me. I liked this team last year. I'm not sure I like what they added this year, and losing Hiroyuki Nakajima is going to put a lot of stress on that team in terms of leadership. You're bringing Asamura out there to play short. I don't know what he's going to do defensively. I think I'm just assuming there might be a little bit of a drop-off, and I don't know how that's going to affect him at the plate, and I know it's going to affect the pitching, the defense, the atmosphere, and ultimately the run production. And I say it makes them a fourth place team, but then I thought about it again, and I thought about their rotation. Kishi, Wakui, Nogami, Ishii, Nishiguchi, Kikuchi, and Kikuchi didn't pitch very well. I ratcheted that down to fifth place. Sorry, Mike.
I'm going to go with third for the Lions, if only because I haven't seen anybody who's better at dealing with uncertain lineups than Watanabe.
Mm-hmm.
He just seems to get, he never panics. he's not gonna make the situation any worse than it is. Now, they've got some pluses. Takeya Nakamura could come back and have a decent season. Are they going to miss Nakajima? No doubt. But, you know, they have a nice foreign core on this team. They have, I think the guy they're going to miss more is Kataoka if he's not healthy. He's a player I don't particularly like, but they seem to play better when he's on the team. You know, because he's like part of the plan. Now, Nakajima's been part of the plan. He wasn't last year. They had more injuries than they usually have. I mean, the Lions are like an injured team all the time. But they had more than they usually have. Kuriyama is a big, big player who isn't noticed because he's a guy who hits. He does everything well, but he's not a superstar at any of them. You know, he doesn't hit 350. He doesn't hit 20 home runs. He doesn't steal 50 bases, but he does all those things. And he's the team leader. He should be back. I like the Lions. I'm going to finish. I have him finishing third.
Okay. The Hawks. I kept putting this together over and over, and I did it with the Hawks in third, and then I just kept moving them up higher and higher, and it's because of their rotation. Setsu, Otonari, Takeda, the second-year guy. Terahata is probably going to make the rotation. Hoashi, who was injured last year, is coming back. I think he's going to contribute. Young, the other, not the Yodaikon, but the... He's the older brother, as I remember.
Yao Shun is the older brother.
Right, and I just look at this rotation. I think it's the best in the Pacific League.
Yeah.
I don't know what the Rocket Boy Igarashi is going to give him. I don't know what Vicente Padilla is going to give them out of the bullpen, probably. He can pitch. I know that. He's just been weird hitting people for no reason. Again, the bullpen, Falkenberg, Morihuku, the rookie Higashihama might get some playing time. I just think they have talent to spare. I think Willie Mopeña, even with his strikeouts that he brought over last year and was still able to make an impact with the home runs, I don't know what LaHare is going to do in terms of his impact, but I think he's going to play. Matsuda, Uchikawa, Honda, I think they're loaded. The kid, Yuki Yanagita, is leading Japan in home runs in the spring. I just think they're loaded, and I got them finishing first.
I have them, well, you've said more than I could have said about the Hawks. I do like Brian LaHare. I liken him to Matt Mertens at this stage in his career, although not, you know, defensively, but in terms of a hitter with a plan and a positive guy who's basically his quest right now is to get 400 at-bats with one team. I liked what I saw Vicente Padilla pitching against Cuba.
Vicente!
Right.
He was a Dodger.
And I like the rookie, Higashihama, their first draft choice. They're loaded with pitching. If they can sort it out, my guess is that Akiyama is a guy who can sort this. He can sort through a lot of talent and make a plan. I have him finishing first, no doubt.
Okay. The Fighters, Shohei Ohtani, the talk of the draft, the talk of the spring season, the double-sworded samurai. He's been the man.
Double-sworded.
Yeah, he's been the man. The other day he played in a preseason game, and he pitched, then he batted, then he went out to play right field. It was this huge thing, and they showed all the pitches that he threw. He hit 157 on the gun. I think he's a toy. You know, I think he's a novelty, and I hope they don't use him like that just to draw fans. But I do want to see, you know, the gimmicky kind of thing where he goes, he's playing in right field, he comes in, and I don't think we're going to see it that way. I think the order we're going to see it in, he's maybe he pinch hits, then he pitches, then he goes out to right field and plays in the field so that they don't have to lose a player for each move. I think we're going to see that sometime this year, but I don't know that he's going to have a great impact on them in the standings. He's not going to pitch that many innings. I don't think they really increased or improved. You know, they're pretty much status quo with their rotation. Bobby Keppel's probably coming back. Masaru Takeda, you know what he does. Brian Wolf. Masaru Nakamura, who pitched really well in the Japan Series last year, probably is going to step up his game, but I don't think they have enough pitching. Plus, they are still stuck with Sho Nakata. I got him finishing fourth.
I think Sho Nakata is a guy who could have a tremendous season. I saw a lot of growth in him in the WBC, which is Tatsunami. You know, the only good thing of
the power of Tatsunami. Yeah,
I don't think it was necessarily the power of Nakata, but Tatsunami, or I should say. Okay, what do we have? We have, as far as Ohtani goes, I guess I wrote him in capital letters on my notes. I like the stuff. Do I think he's a gimmick? Well, I would like to not think so, but having seen manager Hideki Kuriyama's affection for the handkerchief prince, I have to think he might be a gimmick. But I love the idea that he can do both. This is such a dream, you know, this all-rounder. Now, eventually, if he can hit worth his salt,
he's a single
hitter. Right. Okay. Now, if he turns into a real valuable hitter, they'll say, you know, forget about pitching, because that's just the way the game is. They talk about pitching being the game, but if you can hit, you're more predictable, more dependable than a pitcher. Okay, thinking about Shohei Ohtani and how he's going to be used, I think what we want to do is turn the calendar back to the 1920s when John McGraw was the manager of the New York Giants, and he often had a player on his roster who was a pitcher, first baseman, pinch hitter, a guy who would start, who was either a spot starter or a guy in the rotation who would pinch hit between starts and sometimes play first base. Shohei Ohtani might fill that role. It could be a positive one. You know, it's unproven ground. We just don't know how it's going to work out, which for me is a positive.
Yeah,
because they're going forward instead of saying it shouldn't happen, which is what most people are telling me. They shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, most of those crusty old Japanese former players, that's what they're all saying. You should concentrate on one thing.
Yeah. They should be like, this was, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, people saying that, you know, Serena and Venus Williams have to play more tennis if they're going to be successful. They shouldn't listen to their father, who wasn't a tennis coach. Well, you know, they turned out okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not always the conventional wisdom that worked. Now, I like the Fighters. I think they have a plan. I think they have a great organization. I'm going to pick them second.
Okay. The Marines. I looked at their rotation. I looked at what they had brought in, Dickie Gonzalez, the new manager, Tomo Ito. I'm just not really high on that. I think they brought in Gigi Sato, too. Does that make you a better team? No, I don't think so. And I don't see any reason why they should not be in last place. The pitching is probably going to be okay. Narusse, Greisinger, Katakawa, maybe Gonzalez will get some throws if he's healthy. Fujioka in his second year, Shingo Ono, Shunsuke Watanabe. They're going to be decent, but I don't think they're shut down. They're not lights out guys. They're going to give up base runners. They're going to give up runs. And I don't know that they have enough on offense to make up for that. I see them finishing in last place.
I think that's a very likely scenario. I think the most interesting scenario. I think the most interesting scenario, if you're into black humor, or I should say morbid humor, not to cast aspersions on any particular colors, but is the race by the Marines and the Oryx Buffaloes to see who can do the least with the most and the most with the least. And there's lots of things I like about the Marines, other than they're great fans, but I just don't see them, you know, I just don't see them pulling it out with what they've got, but I have them finishing fifth.
Okay.
Which brings us to the Oryx Buffaloes. Now, the Oryx Buffaloes are an amazing, they're almost like a fantasy draft gone bad. They've got all these players, but they're overloaded at talent at some positions, and they're completely blank at others. So, Mahara, how's Mahara looked? Have you heard anything good about him? I heard good things about him at the very beginning of the preseason exhibition games.
Nothing good, nothing bad, just so-so.
Okay. Well, you know, again, if he comes in... The problem is this. Okay, my problem is this. They've got Yoshio Itoi, which is great, but they've got Keiichi Hirano as the second baseman. They've got former shortstop Mitsutaka Goto, who's a second baseman. They'll have a great outfield. They'll be deep at second base. They got a decent third baseman. They got a ton of pitching candidates.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a first-year, essentially a first-year manager, Hiroshi Moriwaki, who personally I like. I think he's a great guy. And I think, you know, this is going to be, if this guy is a genius, we're going to find out in a hurry. But that's so, you know, this is, goes back to the Rubik Cube unicycle problem.
Yeah.
Unicycle problem. Okay, well, it's one of those one things. And, you know, they've got so much talent, but it's so jumbled. If he can make sense out of it, he deserves the Nobel Prize for baseball.
The Nobel, what, Diamond Prize, huh?
Exactly. You know, you get, like, give him some frequent flyer miles or something.
All right, so.
I see him finishing last.
You got him in last place. Okay. Well, I look at the Buffaloes, and when you think about it, it's the perfect nickname for this team because the Buffaloes look like those big, stupid animals that used to get shot from trains way, way back in the, what?
The Wild West.
In the Wild West, yeah. So it just seems like, you know, it seems like they're big and intimidating, but when you get up on them, you just realize that they're stupid things looking for grass to eat. So
that's me. They got players you got to like Lee DeHoe, and if Okada is healthy, he's a tremendous hitter. But, you know, what about like things like who's going to play shortstop?
Yeah, I think they have a lot of pitching. I mean, on paper, this team could beat up another piece of paper really bad because, because on paper, they're talented. But we're That's talking about the Buffaloes, and the history of the club, you know, has failure written all over it from you know, in recent decades. So, you know, but I'm still going to drink the punch on this team, and I'm going to predict the playoff finish because I think Moriwaki is a calm. He's very attentive and smart guy. I think he's got what it takes to mold this team into what he wants if he has a vision, which I think he does. Because if anything, then he's learned with SoftBank. I think it's learning to put together a plan and to try to go out and execute it. And if he doesn't execute the plan, maybe he'll execute some of these players. But I think
would not. He's too nice.
Yeah, I know. I think Tono's going to be useful for him. You know, he'll be steady. My man crush guy, Itoi, is going to do what he does. Hopefully that'll be getting on base a lot. And hopefully they'll be able to produce some runs. I mean, Lee DeHoe had such a really good year, but he did it with almost nobody on base. Sakaguchi missed a lot of time last year with the bad shoulder. If he's back and healthy.
I said, yep.
Yeah, if he's back and healthy, that makes a huge difference. Kishida, I think they're taking him out of the closer role. They're going to put him back in the rotation, see what he can do there. I think the pen has a couple issues. I think the infield has a couple issues, but I'm going to drink the punch, and I'm going to say guys like Yagi is going to contribute. I think Kaneko is going to come back and be healthy just maybe in the second half of the season. I think it's going to help him finish, and I got him going in second place. And I feel stupid bad things about him. I'm saying they're going to finish in second place because I like to pick upsets.
Okay, I hear that, and I just wonder. In some ways, the Buffaloes remind me of the Bay Stars about 10 years ago when they had players they would give away their best players almost because they didn't think they should have been their best players. But their best pitcher last year was Kisanuki. The guy who pitched the most dependable pitcher was Kisanuki. I know they had a lot of injuries, but you know, when you get rid of somebody who's one of your better players, when you're a bad team and you get rid of one guy who's one of your better players, you know, what does that say for you? It says either A, your best player was really bad, in which case you got no chance, or, you know, you got a lot of guts. You just don't know what to do with that. But I think Kisanuki, you know, you put him with a team with a really good defense, he could be a revelation.
All right.
Or well, not, but we'll see. But, you know, it's sort of like they said, oh, we could get Itoi. We could get somebody we could use, but he'll make the other parts that were effective no longer useful because we can't play five outfielders at the same time. You know, it could be interesting. This is a team where we always say about Oryx, if it were a matter of weighing up the talent on the team, they'd always be competitive.
Okay, well, Wayne has the Hawks first, Lions second, Fighters third, Buffaloes fourth. Marines 5th, and Eagles 6th. Well, those are our predictions, and we're sticking to them, at least for half a season.
For the next, until the season starts. These are our preseason positions, predictions.
All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, this is from Brian in Los Angeles. He says, thanks to you and Jim for your great coverage of the WBC on the last podcast. Here in the U.S., there's very little talk about the tournament. The only thing that made SportsCenter over the weekend was the Canada-Mexico fight. This is way back when the Canada-Mexico got into it over the bunt for an extra run here. Brian has a number of questions, but they're all basically about stadiums. He says, can you give us a rundown of the stadiums in MPV? Which would be the best to visit if we could only go to one, and we have no particular rooting interest in teams? Now, I've heard you mention that one of the parks, Saitama, is really hard to get to. Are most of them near train stations? And there's still more questions. Are tickets available pretty much at the gate, or are there places that sell out all the time? Which stadium has the best in-game experience, sightlines, food, crowd support, and that kind of thing? Jeez. He probably suggested this for an off-season thing, but I think we can do it quickly here. My favorite stadium, of course, is clearly going to be Nagoya Dome. I was in it before. I was in it when they broke ground, and I saw it go up, but I haven't been to Mazda Zoom Zoom Stadium in Hiroshima, and it looks like a really great place. I'm going to try to get out there. I like Yokohama Stadium. Jingu is also a great look. The seats are really close to the field. Tokyo Dome is pretty much okay. For atmosphere, nothing beats QVC Marines Field, I guess they call it now this year. I think that's the same as last year. And that's where the Chiba Lotte Marines play. The fans, the jumping fans, the songs, it's just awesome. My least favorite are Osaka Dome. It's just hard to see. Fukuoka Dome is kind of dark, dankish, and for me, it wasn't a real baseball atmosphere. Seibu Dome is tough because it's hard to get to, and the air control is pretty much non-existent.
Well, there is basically Seibu Dome is an existing is a they put a frisbee, or I don't know what a walk. They put the world's biggest walk on top of a baseball stadium that exists, and there are no walls joining the stadium with the walk.
Right.
It's just air, and what happens with Seibu is that in the spring and the fall it is freezing, and in the summer it can turn into the world's largest outdoor sauna. So if you're in need of a sauna, it's a great place to go in July.
Right. August.
But it is remote. It's hard to get to. Yeah. It's hard to get to.
And for me, the last
train station.
Yeah.
If it is near a train station, they're all near train stations. Just, you know, some train stations are hubs and centrally located, and some are the end of the line, and Cebu is the end of the line.
Right.
Okay.
And my other least favorite is Sapporo Dome, just because it's really not set up for baseball. So it's the seats are kind of far away from the ground, but it's a great place to go and watch a game in terms of atmosphere. What about you?
Yep. I think if I had to pick one, I'd go with Koshien as opposed to Chiba, basically because you have the crowd interest, you have real grass, you have the most historic baseball park in Japan, and you just have that massive Tigers thing going on. Now, is there a game? Are there tickets that sell out? In this current economy, the answer is no. Nobody's selling out. But if the Tigers are anywhere near first place, they're going to start selling out, and you'll have to take a line to get tickets. That can't really be said about any place here. Even Tokyo Dome right now is probably not quite in that category yet, unless it's a Tigers Giants game.
Right.
Now, as far as the best sight lines, my favorites are Yokohama.
Yokohama's great. I think it's the best.
The very steep, the stadium basically is a concentric circle with the center somewhat behind second base. You can sit near the foul pole in the seats that cost $10, and you feel like you're in the infield. And they're called infield seats, and you feel like you're in the infield. There really aren't any bad seats. You can't see the catcher disappearing behind the very high wall behind the backstop for a foul fly, so scouts hate it. But it's a wonderful park. If it had grass, you know, I'd marry it. Kleenex Stadium in Miyagi is a beautiful stadium. Cebu Dome has a few. Some of the amenities are quite nice. The seats, if you have one of these picnic seats near the field, it's quite good. Hiroshima Stadium, I go with John. I saw it for the first time when I was zipping by it on the Shinkansen in February. Looks gorgeous. So yeah, my favorite would be Koshien. Best atmosphere, I think the runner up would be QVC Marine Field. So if you have if you're in Tokyo, go to Chiba. If you're in Osaka, go to Koshien.
All right. So, Brian, I hope that answers the questions for you. Thank you very much for sending them in. And JBW shout-out goes to Dave McNeely of Baltimore. He came out to the Tokyo round of the WBC, and we hooked up for a quick coffee and a chat. Jim was there as well. It was more coffeeing than chatting, but I'm glad we got to see him. He's been listening to us for quite a while, and we appreciate that. It was nice meeting you, Dave. Now, your opinions and comments are awesome. We just need more of them, so especially MP3s. So everyone, please go ahead and send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll play them and address them on the show. And you can also leave us a comment or question on the Facebook page.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, this has been a long show.
Over the off season.
Yeah, thank you very much. We're going to start going weekly starting next week. This was a really long show. I thank you for listening all the way to the end. I'm sure it took you longer than usual, but thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
We will, when the baseball season will have started.
That's right. Enjoy your opening day.
Enjoy it, babe.